This land is mine. God gave this land to me. This brave and ancient land to me. And when the morning sun reveals her hills and plains, then I see a land where children can run free. So take my hand and walk this land with me, and walk this lovely land with me. Though I am just a man, when you are by my side, with the help of God, I know I can be.
Hard to believe, but we are in the beginning of year 5990. Yeah. 10 years to go before God returns. And we begin the millennial Shabbat. It is a time that will be more interesting than any the world has ever endured. And today is officially New Year's Day. 2 weeks from now, we will be celebrating Pesach, Matzah, and Makorim. I prefer to call it Chag Matzah. The favorite meal, of course, for everyone is Pesach. But the event is Chag Matzah, which Pesach is part, which is the opposite of the way that it is celebrated in Judaism, where matzah is a ingredient and Pesach, which is the opposite of God's intent. But as we move into the last 10 years before Yahweh returns, it's going to be hellacious out there. And some of the things were predictable. We knew going back now 9 years ago that the United States malfeasance in the Ukraine was going to lead to world war. We knew that the United States was manipulating the Ukraine for the purpose of tearing it away from Russian influence and making it part of NATO, and that it would erupt in war. And it's exactly what the United States has continued to do, although I don't think anyone would have fathomed that the United States would be so brazen as to blow up a $7 billion natural gas pipeline that ransacked the economies of European countries. But nonetheless, we did. I don't think I could have fathomed that the United States would send hundreds of billions of dollars worth of advanced weaponry to the Ukraine to make it a killing field with a proxy war that has left the world with at least 250,000 dead. The most recent estimates is that the rebuilding of the Ukraine would cost $400 billion, but that doesn't even touch it because the destruction of the Ukraine will continue to go on for years, and the Ukrainians are the least ethical people on the planet, and no matter how much money you were to give them, most of it would go to graft.
Yeah.
So there we are, and then the Chinese, Xi, went in and met with Putin, invited Putin to China, called him a great friend and important neighbor. And the United States had the audacity to threaten China to say that it would be viewed as a act hostile to the interests of America if China were to aid Russia. But as ever the hypocrites, we, of course, can have all of the world that we influence send weapons to Ukraine to kill Russians, and we can sanction Russia in all ways feasible, and that's okay. But if their neighbor, China, were to do anything to aid them, well, that is unacceptable. I would say that is pure and unadulterated hypocrisy. And while normally that would be the top story going into the last 10 years, that the world is headed to nuclear war, the United States started it, Russia jumped in, and now at the birthplace of Hasidic Judaism, the place where that was actually more anti-Semitic and its perpetrator of pogroms than any country in Europe, we have the fulcrum for a nuclear and a world war. But there's other issues. One is that we continue to see banks fail. Now, just today, there was a run on Deutsche Bank stock, the big German bank. Just this week, Credit Suisse was swallowed by UBS. And it was interesting to read Saudi Arabia's comments. Saudi Arabia said, you know, you Swiss are got your tongues flapping when you talk about dictatorial countries and the lack of rule of law as you lecture Saudi Arabia. And here, where we, Saudi Arabia, were one of the largest shareholders in a company that we thought would govern by the rule of law, you change the laws one night to the next, wipe out the value of our stock, and act like complete and total tyrants. So who's the dictatorial state? That was from Saudi Arabia. Yeah. And they're right.
Boy, wow. Yeah, they're right.
Yeah. So the world's financial system is beginning to show the cracks that we have talked about that are inevitable. It's going to cost lead to total and complete anarchy. And speaking of anarchy, there's two places in the world right now that are being ripped apart at the seams, both by numbskull progressives, easily the dumbest people on earth because they actually think that they're smart, the most immoral people on earth because they actually think that they're righteous. But these anarchists in France are burning the place down. They're terrorizing their fellow citizens. They're protesting over pension reform. I think Marseillon has said essentially that unless the retirement age ticks up a couple of years from 61 to 63, the pension system is bankrupt. Well, there's more problems than the French lack of economy than that, but he is right that the socialist mentality in France is not sustainable. And so it is a prudent move. It's not enough. But what are the anarchists, the progressives doing? They're burning the city down, having all manner of conniption fits because they don't want the retirement age to tick up 2 years. And they think that somehow they're entitled to a choice that if it were continued to be implemented, it would bankrupt the system so that nobody has anything and that they're not smart enough to realize it. And in their country, it's hundreds of thousands of people that are protesting. The country we care the most about is the country that is amongst the hardest to love. If it wasn't for Yahweh and his love for his people, they would be difficult to love. What they're doing to their own country now is utterly despicable. I'm speaking of Israel. Netanyahu is traveling through Europe with the express purpose of galvanizing support to keep Iran from having a nuclear bomb. Israel is the only country that seems to care about it. and the prime minister is trying to rally European heads of state to the cause of preventing it. And all the while, he is dogged by Jews screaming against him, demeaning the value of his efforts and degrading Israel. Today in England, there were several hundred of them that spouted slogans that indicated they had the IQ of a chicken. I am not a Netanyahu fan. I don't think anyone as part of the covenant would be. I love his name, but that's the only thing I like about him. His coalition with the ultra-right-wing wackos and the Haredim, the religious reprobates, is disastrous for Israel. You know, the religious reprobates want all manner of government subsidy and control. What they recognize and won't say is that ultra-Orthodox Judaism, which was created in the 17th and 18th centuries, is irrational. Exposed to reason, it crumbles. Exposed to fact, it crumbles. Giving people a choice, they would drop it like a hot brick. And so what they want is for the government and secular Jews to have to fund them while they spend all day not studying the Torah, but studying the Talmud and other numbskull rabbis. And they do nothing but breed. They're good at making babies, but they're thoughtless. They don't study anything meaningful. They're indoctrinated their whole lives. They're specifically kept from learning the truth about how stupid their religion is, and yet they pretend that they're doing this great service to a God who despises them. And so that's one side. And the other side, you have progressive numbskulls who are trying to disrupt the country. They actually call it Days of Disruption. They're led by, I think, one of the most despicable human beings on the planet, Lapid, who is a self-appointed opposition leader and a progressive. And they claim that they're rallying for democracy in support of a judiciary that has absolutely no democratic curves. It has, no one is voted for. It's not appointed by anyone who is elected. It is self-appointed. It has no constitution to rein it in. It has no jurisdiction. It has nothing other than they continually make very liberal claims against Israel that are supposed to be irrefutable because they're the high court. But without a constitution and without them being appointed by politicians, they are nothing but a house afire. It is a complete and utter disgrace what Israel has as a Supreme Court. And it has to be controlled. If there is no judicial reform, there will be no Israel. And the way the progressives are tearing the country apart, if there is judicial reform, they will destroy Israel. So Israel is now facing suicide. The number of people, of course, who voted in favor of the current broken and disgusting coalition was significant. The number of people who are disrupting the country is insignificant by comparison, but progressives are exceedingly destructive. And that's what we have in Israel, and it does not fare well for the country. There was a interesting speech this week. Smotch, the one of the ministers of the Knesset, that is a minister in the Netanyahu government, was in France, and he gave a speech which he said there is no such thing as a Palestinian. There is no such place as Palestine, and he went on to describe it. And as a result, the foreign minister of the European Union, screamed bloody murder and foul and said that, you know, can't be tolerated and being said anywhere in the world. You had the head of the PA call it racism. You had Jordan saying that they want to pull out of any agreement with Israel, and a couple of the Abraham Accord countries saying the same thing, asking to nullify the agreements. It is truly amazing that the world has been lied to so often about this myth that there is a people called Palestinians and a place called Palestine, that when they are told that there is no such thing, they think the problem is with the person making the statement, and they can't even imagine that that's true. And yet the evidence is undeniable. It's ubiquitous. It is absolutely irrefutable. When the Romans renamed Judea Philistia, it was at the time the province of Yehuda. It had been the province of Yehuda all the time under Roman subjugation. It had been the province of Yehuda under Greek subjugation. It had been the province of Yehuda when the Babylonians came and ransacked it, and when the Assyrians tried to destroy it. It goes back as the province of Yehuda all the way back to Jacob and the award of land, and of course its capital was founded by King David. The history is irrefutable. It is etched in stone. The archaeology proves it. And, of course, the only book that even has the name of a Philistine, which is the Torah and the prophets, also affirm it. The name wouldn't even be known if it wasn't for what was recorded about them, because they don't exist anymore. They were hammered into oblivion for their aggressiveness against Jews by Dodd, and then later by the Assyrians, the Babylonians, and even the Greeks, such that there is no legacy of the Palestinians. And so the Philistines are gone. And no one referred to themselves as a Palestinian, as a Muslim, or as an Arab until the lie was concocted by the PLO in Egypt. I believe it was right around 1968 is when the myth began to be promulgated. And because no one stood up and said, that's a bold-faced lie, stop it, and because secular scholars like using Latin terms, and this was a lie promulgated by the Romans, the myth caught on. And the lie has been repeated so many times that there is actually this belief that there is such thing as a Palestinian people, a place called Palestine, therefore there should be a two-state solution, therefore from the river to the sea, they will attempt to wipe out Israel and every Jew. And it's too few Jews that are willing to tell the truth. Their media won't report it. Their politicians very seldom say it. Netanyahu didn't even have the character to say, why are you upset with him? He told the truth. If you can't handle the truth, that's your problem. But nonetheless, that was what took place in Israel, in a country that I don't think there is any solution to this. Because let's say that Netanyahu, who's right now doing something that is in violation of a Supreme Court order. The Supreme Court, one of the justices wrote a letter and said, because you're conflicted and that you're being tried, you can't participate in judicial reform. Now, there's no constitutional edict that said that. She had no basis to say it. But on the rest, she wrote a letter to say it. So because there is no higher court, because there's no means to control the Supreme Court. Netanyahu was barred by the Supreme Court for being involved in judicial reform. And yet he says, you know, if I don't get involved, we have no country. But let's say they need to pass some of the steps along the way for judicial reform, and the idiots that are part of the progressive of their Supreme Court, did they strike it down? So what then? It's a catch-22. There is no remedy, and which is why the Likud party wants a provision that said that it says that the Supreme Court, says there's no constitution, can't override the majority of the Knesset, because they know that for a period that it'll be needed to keep the Supreme Court for overturning judicial reform. And all the while, the progressives that are in Tel Aviv in particular will continue to rally around their transvestite and homosexual and all other manner of pride flags and creating anarchy for the country and shutting it down. It is a dire situation for the country. It's what we would have expected. The country will continue to falter. And yet there is hope, because Yahweh is returning in 2033, year 6000 Yah. There will be Yehudim and Yisraelites that are going to recognize him, that will be there proudly calling out his name. That number now all reside in the covenant family. They are primarily reside in the United States, the number of Jews who are covenant, who know Yahweh, who meet the conditions of the covenant, who have walked away from religion and politics. And Yisrael is exceedingly few, but hopefully things will get their attention over these next 10 years, so that there's I almost feel uncomfortable saying a reasonable number, because God's never been impressed with numbers. He's far more interested in the quality of people who will be there than the number of people that will be there. But still, the universe is very large. Eternity is a very long time. And it our time and travels will be more enjoyable if there are more people. And we're going to feel better about everything if we continue to awaken Yehudim so that they stop this nonsense and return to Yahweh and enjoy Kippurim as Dod, their Messiah and King, returns with Yahweh on October 2nd, 2033. All right, that's probably enough for the news. I do not have any good news, only bad news. We had 2 weeks of Q&A. We'll go back to it here in a month or so. But we are going to return to the book of Hosea. This is the eighth volume of Yada Yahweh. And this was the statement that led us into Yirmiyah now 3 weeks ago. It reads, I will go away and return to my place until they closely examine and carefully consider the way to receive the benefits of the relationship through the restoring witness and eternal testimony. And they seek my presence, responsibly investigating and learning about my appearance. It is during the time of trouble that they will approach by earnestly seeking me, longing to learn about the relationship. Hosea, he saves, 5:15. Yahweh wrote that for this particular program, for us to share it with you this evening. It is the absolute, it's hard to see it otherwise. It is the absolute perfect statement for what we have just shared with you. This was written around 750-ish BCE, and Yahweh was telling his people that I'm leaving you. You're too religious, too political, too disgusting for me. I'm leaving you. And I'm going back to my place. You can lie to one another, do whatever you wish to do, bring all manner of enemies upon yourself. And they did. I mean, they would have the the Babylonians. They would have the Greeks. They would have the Romans three times. They would have the Roman Catholics. They would have the Muslims. They would have the Nazis. And now they have progressives. They brought them, these enemies, upon themselves because Yahweh left them because he could not stand them. God is a father. They are his children. For him to say, I'm going to leave you, means that they had to be utterly disgusting.
Really bad.
And that's the way he sees Jews today. Now, it's not to say that he sees Goyim better or Christians better or Muslims better. He doesn't. But there's a difference. Christians were never his people. Muslims were never his people. Goyim are not his people. Now, it's possible for Goy to become part of the covenant, and there are many. But they, as a group, were not the people he chose. He chose many Goyim individually, but he chose Israel collectively. He established his covenant with Israel. He revealed himself to Israel. He liberated Israel. He gave a land to Israel. All of his prophets were descendants of Jacob. So they have no excuse, and yet they were despicable and have continued to be and are today showing the worst possible behavior. So he says, I will go away and return. Halak Shub. To my place, El Makom, Ani, until they closely examine and carefully consider the way to receive the benefits of the relationship through the restoring witness of the eternal testimony. Three very, very powerful Hebrew words. Ad, which means until. It means witness. It means testimony. It means everlasting. It means restoring. Asher is the connection. It's the glue. It's the when Yahweh introduced himself to Moshe and explaining his name, Asher was used twice in that statement, along with Haya. Asher is a path, not a path, it's the path to God. It is the means to receive the benefits of the relationship. It's the correct and narrow way to walk, to be part of the family. And Shamar means to observe. It means to closely examine and to carefully consider. Those three words were used in conjunction. And they seek my presence, responsibly investigating and learning about my appearance. The only way that's possible is to throw away the goddamn Talmud. Toss it. Stop listening to the rabbis. Silence the Haredim and open the Torah and prophets. Read what God had to say. Until his people closely examine and carefully consider the way to receive the benefits of the relationship through the restoring witness of the eternal testimony, and they seek my presence, responsibly investigating and learning about my appearance, I am going to go away to my place. I will only return when that changes. And so he said, it is during a time of trouble, Baha Sa'ar, a period of great distress, of being besieged and restricted, enclosed and confined, and you think you're confined now.
Wait till
you give up the so-called West Bank, Judea and Samaria, to appease the world, and you have a Islamic state controlled by Hamas on the east and the west, and one controlled by Hezbollah on the north, and Saudi Arabia and Egypt on the south. you think it's bad now, consider it then. It is during a time of trouble. Boy, if this wasn't a time of trouble for Israel, then Yahweh needs to recoin a word for Sa'ar that they will approach. It is during this time of trouble that they will approach by earnestly seeking me, longing to learn about the relationship. Peel and perfect, paragogic nun, energicus of choosing Yahweh. And yet, you know, I read 4 or 5 Israeli newspapers a day.
Mm-hmm.
And I read the comments by the readers of those newspapers. And you know something? I have never seen Yahweh's name mentioned in any of them. I'm not even sure it'd be allowed. I listen to the rabbis only so that I know what I'm up against. Never heard them say Yahweh's name. Until that changes, Yahweh will stay away from Israel. Again, Hosea 5:15 is the perfect passage to read on New Year's Day, 5990, just 10 years away from Yahweh's return. If you are a Jew and you're wondering why we're speaking of 5990 and the rabbis are 250-some-odd years different, it's because the system they're using was created by Maimonides, who the Rambam was a dum-dum. I mean, it's astounding that he is viewed credibly by Jews. His numbering system, well, if you presented it in an eighth grade class, you'd get an F. It is strictly stupid. It's more him being enamored with the number 19 because of its relevance in Islam, with the surahs being divisible by 19 and him serving as a vizier to Muslim sultans, than it is anything else. It has nothing to do with the story Yahweh told in the Torah or the genealogies that he provided within the Torah for us to know these events. And of course, because he does not acknowledge Yahweh's fulfillment of Pesach, Matzah, Bukurim, and Shavuah in year 4000 Yah, he has no basis to anchor his timeline, because he does not understand the Yobel and how Yahweh confirmed the covenant with Abraham in year 2000 Yah, 1868 BCE, how Dod is the single most important character in the story. He is the Messiah. He is the King of Kings. He is the Son of God. And because they do not understand his importance, they do not know that he lived right in the center of this time. He is the fulcrum upon which everything pivots. And therefore, not understanding these anchors and the importance of the fulfillment of the Moed Mikre, they are waving themselves into the abyss, having no concept of time. It is 5990. There are 10 years left until Yahweh's return. When we shared this passage 3 weeks ago, I mentioned that the event, Yahweh's return, is spoken of very vividly by Yirmiyah. It's the most important revelation in the book of Yirmiyah. The message is recorded in the 30th and 31st chapters of Yirmiyah, and that is where we ended our program 3 weeks ago, and that's where we're going to return. And I know, Kirk, you felt that I had treated you unfairly with a question regarding, did you look up a word, and you have sent me your penance on word search and are now the foremost expert on the TASD. And so there are some point here that I know you're going to interrupt and make the great declaration.
No, that was between you and me. I don't want to slow you down. You're on a roll, man. This is
okay.
Good.
Okay.
But I was just.
I'm obviously having fun with you. But you brought it on yourself, so there.
Of course.
But yes,
self-inflicted.
Of course, self-inflicted wound. I read your letter. Kirk is the only person that will send you an email of a handwritten letter. By the way, he wrote a handwritten letter and then he took a picture of it and sent it to me. So
works.
Yes, very nice printing. For anybody who would wonder, but nonetheless, that's not what I did see. Just out of respect, I happen to agree with you that beyond the three letters that comprise Yahweh's name, the Yod, the hand reaching down and out to us, the open hand mm-hmm. reaching down and out to us, the two Hays, which are the two people standing up, reaching up and looking up to Yahweh, they represent Abraham and Sarah, and the wall, which is the tenth peg in between, securing them, protecting them. Apart from those three letters that comprise the letters in Yahweh's name, the Tazdi is easily the most controversial. It's the one where every time I'm translating a Hebrew word and it begins with the Tazdi, I go, okay. What are we going to find here? Now, there are some good ones, you know. Eretz has a Tazdi in it. Yeah, Eretz has a Tazdi in it, the lamb. Mm-hmm. And Sion. Sion is not written with an S or a Z, but with a Tazdi, a TS. And it represents the signpost on the way between Dode's home and Yahweh's along the ridgeline of Moriah. So there are some positive Tazdi words. And in that sense, we look at the original graphic depiction as a person in the same kind of position we're in as we're studying Yahweh's testimony. It's a person kind of sitting up, leaning up, reading a book, if you will, is what the Tazdi looks like on its when it's viewed in one of these positive veins. But it's also a person lounging around doing nothing. And God's not a do-nothing sort of a God. He likes work. He likes people who are passionate and intense and courageous and bold. And so lounging around isn't his thing. It's interesting. He doesn't even lounge around on the Shabbat. And the Shabbat doesn't have a Tazdi in it, so that's just not his thing. And so when we come to the next Tazdi world, we'll talk about it. And I think what you find that it's about one third of the Tazdi words are neutral, about 60-some percent
almost
negative.
46%, yeah, and then positive. Negative.
46% are negative.
Sorry, negative is the largest, yes.
Yes, and that's like 46%, and then the second largest is neutral.
Mm-hmm.
And then the smallest percentage is positive.
The reason it was important, you allowed mm-hmm. me to put a chart on the website, and as I look in, that one was still it's odd, you know. So I was trying to get as close as I could, so when somebody reads it, they'll not be.
Yeah.
I'm not leading them down the wrong path. Here on what this
is. There are one of the very interesting things that Kirk came up with that I thought was unheralded is that there are, I think it's 13 of the 22 Hebrew letters that are slanted, that point in one direction or the other. Most of them mm-hmm. Move from right to left, the way that Hebrew reads, which means they aren't symmetrical. There's an aspect of them that shows the letter like a plowing from right to left, the way that Hebrew reads. A sign that would be leaning in that direction, a root growing in that direction, a hand reaching out in that direction. So most of them, the only one that actually moves in the opposite direction against the way that he drew
Gimel.
The Gimel. Yeah. And, of course, the Gimel is for Gaza and Goyim, Gomorrah.
Mm-hmm.
There are very few
Gimel
words that are positive. So,
right.
And it's the one, it's a picture of a foot, and the foot is going in the wrong direction, walking away. And what Kirk figured out is that when Yah was, one of the letters in Yahweh's name, one or more, are in a word, if the letters face, like a Rosh, the Rosh faces to the left. So you're going from right to left. It faces the direction that Hebrew reads. And so if you have a word and the letters in Yahweh's name are to the left of the Rosh, so that the Rosh is facing them, then the word has a positive connotation. If it's if the word, the face is looking away from the letters in Yahweh's name, it has a negative connotation. So that God engineered his vocabulary with letters that would convey positive and negative meanings in this way. And I think, Kirk, you're the first person to come up to with that insight. And so it may or may not apply to the TASD. TASD has an entirely different aspect to it in terms of the way that it's drawn. It's the most difficult to interpret because to be observant, which is that last passage in Hosea, encourages us to be is a very positive thing, but being lazy is not. All right, so we're going to we're going to begin this with Yirmiyah 31 and 32, 30.1 and 30.2. It begins the word. The message that's being communicated, Hatabar, which to reveal the way to the benefits of the relationship, Asher, came to exist, Haya, with Yirmiyahu. It means Yahweh raises and lifts up, Yahweh teaches and guides. It means to respect and revere Yahweh. Typically, commonly translated Jeremiah, even though there is no J in the Hebrew language. So the word, which came to reveal the way to enjoy the benefits of the relationship, came to exist with Yirmiyahu from Yahweh to announce, this is what Yahweh, the God of Yisrael, proclaims, so as to declare, of your own volition, write all of these words which lead to the proper path to get the most out of life that I have and will be speaking to you about, doing so in a written document so that there is a permanent record.
Pretty clear.
Yep.
Yahweh has an overwhelming preference for the written word. It is more enduring. It is absolutely necessary for prophecy, and prophecy is the tool that he uses to prove his existence and his authorship of a text like this. Without the written word, there's no way to prove it. With the written word, well, we have the Dead Sea Scrolls now to go back 2,200 years. We have the means to prove these things, and we have sections of the Torah, prophets, and Psalms that we have found that go back another 500-600 years, even beyond that. The advantage of the written word is not just that it's enduring, but that it's a much more effective communication tool because it doesn't change. If you were to give that translation written that way on a piece of paper to 10 people and have each of them read it, the 10th person is going to read it exactly like the first person read it. But if you were to say it to the first person in line and have them repeat it mouth to ear to the next, by the time you got to the 10th person, you might have three words that were the same. So oral transmission is grossly inferior. not only can you read seven times faster than we can process verbal communication, it is much easier to fact check. So, for example, the translations that we have in any one of the 30 books on the yadaya.com site, you can copy and paste any word into a search engine and validate the translations. So it gives you a much easier time of fact-checking and verifying something for yourself. It also gives you the ability, is if you read something and it was powerful, like that statement in Hosha, which was perfectly suited for this moment in time, you can go back and read it two or three times, where if it's spoken, it fades into the ether. The only thing that isn't as effective in the written word versus the spoken word is that you can emote more feeling, emotions, mm-hmm. into the spoken word. Diawa isn't impressed by that, though. It's emotions that got his favorite person, his son, Dode, in trouble. When Dode was thinking, he was on his game. He was right. When he was responding emotionally, he was almost always wrong. So God's preference is that we think our way through life and to him, as opposed to feel our way to him. And therefore, the written word, while it is inferior in terms of communicating emotions, is superior because it plays to the intellect. Because indeed, behold, a time is coming, prophetically reveals Yahweh, when I will return to restore the property and possessions taken during the captivity of my people, Yisrael and Yehuda, declares Yahweh. Well, that means that if you're a fake Palestinian, you're claiming that Israel is yours, you are screwed. If you're a European and you were part of those that robbed the Jews as the Europeans promoted the Holocaust, you're in real trouble. If you're a Roman Catholic and that institution was the most anti-Semitic for the longest period of time, God's not pleased with you. Yeah. And he will return to Israel what was stolen. So God's view is the opposite of the conspiratorialists. They think that, you know, Jews are manipulating the world, trying to steal the world and all that sort of thing. And God's view is, no, the world has robbed his people, and he's going to make it right. So if you are taking the conspiratorial view, then you're in opposition to God. And then I will return and bring them back to the land that for the benefit of the relationship I gave to their fathers, and they will receive it as their inheritance. A lot of Jews have come back to the land. More have not than have, but many have. When God says this, he's talking about bringing really every surviving Jew back to the land. Be careful, because that's not 15 million people or however many God may think that the DNA suggests that they are actually Jewish. The vast, overwhelming majority of Jews, God's going to have nothing to do with. God will not relate to, engage with, have any kind of a relationship with, talk to, endure, tolerate the Haredim. So religious Jews, either Orthodox or ultra-Orthodox, have zero chance to be part of those he calls back home. God is going to have nothing to do with progressives, liberals, or even right-wing political types. You know, when God spoke of why human government institutions were horrible, and he did so through Shemuel, when Shamuel was feeling badly about the fact that the children of Israel had decided they wanted a king to emulate the Goy, and chose Shaul, which turned out to be disastrous for them. Yahweh articulated to Shamuel the 12 reasons that this would impoverish his people. And so in the quest to determine whether liberal or conservative politics are more consistent with God, the answer is very simple. Smaller government is better than big government. A system that relies on the Lowy, the Shaphat, and his Torah is vastly superior to a small government, but a small government is still better than an intrusive one. Everything that man does is counterproductive, and the more man does it, the worse it becomes. So while the conservative political types in Israel would be closer to God's viewpoint than the liberals, the conservatives, by the very fact that they remain political and are not reliant on Yahweh, will not be part of that homecoming. It's going to be just those who acknowledge Yahweh's name, who accept the five conditions of the covenant, and who respond appropriately to Yahweh's seven Moed Mikre. They will be the sum total of those who are brought back to the land. This is still a future date. We're talking about this occurring on October 2nd, 2033, beginning at sunset. And then I will return them, bringing them back to the land that for the benefit of the relationship I gave to their fathers, and they will receive it as an inheritance. There will be 1,000 years where Jews will have the opportunity to live in Israel as the land was originally allocated to them. And Israel at that time will be turned into the conditions experienced in the Garden of Eden. And these are the words which reveal the way Yahweh spoke concerning Yisrael and to Yehuda. This is what Yahweh conveyed as we heard the sounds of concern over the terrorists and terrorism when there were no prospects of reconciliation or peace. Yirmiyah was revealing much of his book at the during the three Babylonian assaults. There were three different times, two of them particularly famous, where the Babylonians came to assault and control Judea. It was all as a result of, well, the Babylonians were egotistical and wanted to impose their will over everybody. But the kings of Israel were maniacal, and they were constantly trying to decide, are we going to bribe the Egyptians to protect us? Are we going to bribe the Babylonians to protect us? Because they weren't willing to rely on Yahweh to protect them. But in this particular case, what Yahweh is saying is that this is a tough time. Just as today is a tough time, that was a tough time. And it's why God was speaking to his people through this prophet. What is particularly important here, because this all plays into Yahweh's return, that's what he's talking about, that's the subject, is that the people he's talking to are not Christians. If you're waiting for your Jesus Christ to come back, you're going to be sorely disappointed. If you think that your church is going to redeem you, you will be really disappointed. If you're looking for the Islamic Mahdi, forget it. If you think there's going to be a Gog and Magog war, you have been misled. The fact of the matter is that God is speaking to Yehuda and Yisrael. Yisrael can include Yehuda, but at this time they were spoken of as separate because by this date, Yisrael was essentially gone. They had been hauled off into slavery by the Assyrians around 720 BCE. they were lost to history. And Yehuda was on the cusp of being hauled away into Babylonian captivity. And so they were separate entities. And God's whole idea of fulfilling reconciliation is he's going to reconcile Israel and Yehuda back, which means he needs to reclaim some of the 10 tribes that comprised Israel, and then get them to form a bond with Yehuda, and then collectively them choosing to restore their relationship with Yahweh. That's what he's speaking about at this time. And keep in mind, the audience are the very people he said, I am going to leave and I'm going to stay away from you for a very long time, and I'm only going to return when there are enough of you paying attention, being observant, that it will that this is going to prevail. All right, and this next sentence, we have a TASD, so Kirk, I'll let you have at it. It says, alas, assuredly, this time will be so different that there has never been anything similar to it. It is the time of Jacob's troubles. Wa'eth zar'ar hu. One of the most profound phrases in the entirety of the Torah. Eth zar'ar hu. It is the time. It's actually Wa'eth zar'ar hu la Jacob. Jacob represents Israel. So it is literally the time, eth meaning time, of Jacob's troubles, which is what zar'ar means. And troubles is a word that is equal anxiety and anguish, distress, adversity, as it is confinement, being narrowed, reduced, and oppressed in dire straits. But by saying this is the time of Jacob's troubles, it is the time of Israel's troubles. The duration of this is subject to debate. There is a statement that is uttered by someone, Daniel, who is a nincompoop, calls Gabriel, but Gabriel means great man of God. The greatest man of God is Dode. No. So I think it is Dode, David, that was speaking, and he seems to indicate that there'll be a seven-year time of Jacob's troubles, with the last three and a half being intense. His assessment is that that right around on Passover, which we're 2 weeks away from, on Passover in 2030, Elia and the second witness, who is a goy, will return on Passover to Jerusalem to speak on Yahweh's behalf and to speak against religion and politics. And that 2 weeks after they return, the devil incarnate, the human manifestation of Satan, is going to be their rival in Jerusalem, and Satan is going to do everything in his power to prevail over every Yehudim. That is this time of troubles. He's going to bring as many influences around the world against God's people as possible. He's fighting a very interesting battle, and that the book of Ezekiel, which is his autobiography, has him coming up with 25 ways to exterminate Jews. Ezekiel's new temple complex is a large version of Auschwitz. It's a concentration camp. It's a death camp. It's designed to bury Jerusalem, removing all traces of it. And so Satan is going to try to both eliminate Jews and win the popularity contest with Jews, because if he gets virtually every Jew to agree with him, then he will have forestalled Yom Kippurim, Yahweh's return on the Day of Reconciliations. If there are no Jews to reconcile, this prophecy is false. The prophecy in Hosea becomes false if there aren't Yehudim and Israelites in Israel awaiting Yahweh's return to greet him by name. Why we do what we do.
Mm-hmm.
Satan has to have a virtually clean sweep. He is going to win the majority. But we're not playing a game of numbers. We're playing a contest of quality. And so that is what is at stake at this time. It is likely that on May Day, the 1st of May in 2030, that the human incarnation of Satan is going to come into Israel, and the opposing force will be Eldia and Yada, speaking on Yahweh's behalf. And so from that time, from Passover in 2030, to Yahweh's return with Dod, David, the king of Israel, the Messiah and Son of God, on Yom Kippurim in 2033 is that 3.5 years. That is the most intense period of the time of Jacob's or Israel's troubles. But it isn't going to be like one day everything is hunky-dory and the next day it is chaotic. It's going to disintegrate between now and then. And the question is, does it continue at the pace that it appears to be disintegrating now? And you know, this is now 10 years out, and we have Israel on the cusp of civil war. We have the world on the cusp of financial chaos and nuclear war. So is it a 7-year period? Do we continue this 10-year sweep into it? Or is it 3.5 years? That isn't certain, but I think the answer is all of those things. Mm-hmm. I think that we are already there.
Yeah, I think so.
And Israel's in far worse shape than we could have imagined, and we're 10 years away. By the time we're 7 years away, it will be far more hellacious. And sometime around that period, between 7 years away and the 3.5 years away, you're going to have the Teruah harvest, and it's going to get far worse in the immediate aftermath of that. So, Kirk, what'd you find out about Sar and Sarah? Sar is the primary word. Sarah is just the feminine version of
yes.
it. But what'd you find out? That's a TASD word with negative connotation.
It's also one of the most horrible words. I mean, it's nothing. I deal with about eight lexicons and a bunch of hardcover ones as well with the Twat and then just Jansenius and all and the Dead Sea Scroll Bible and all that sort of stuff. And I tell you, everywhere you look, we've got. And what was interesting, these things are so related to this particular time that you could not. It's prophetic. You wouldn't have used those definitions in any other time. I mean, besieged, yeah, they're besieged and oppressed and birth pangs and all that sort of thing. But even that would be kind of odd. But the things that jumped out were to be bound, to cramp, to distress, the straits, to lay siege to. That's fine. However, you've got narrow and tight adjectives that are modifying the noun. There's for that's from the adjective with the tesara, and then the shut up and seized, afflicted, anguish, closed off, flint. All those things, you use a flint to blow up, you know, to start a fire. I mean, to blow, to, you know, fire something. It's more gunpowder related than it is to just to stab someone. Or I guess you can start a little bitty fire. But this is, it's just everything about it was, this is one of the most horrible things coming.
Yeah, what's amazing here, Kirk, is that Israel has had some horrible times. Antiochus and his decrees during the time of the Maccabees. In fact, the Maccabees were despicable individuals. So it's it is this was bad Jew against bad Greek, but that was a horrible time for Israel, Antiochus. In fact, you know, in the book of Daniel, the first six chapters of it are complete trash, but the last six chapters have some prophetic merit to them, and there's this implication that Antiochus Epiphanes is the model for the Torahless one of the last days, of this fellow that's going to be the incarnation of Satan. And so that was a bad time. Going back prior to that, the Babylonian siege of three sieges of Judea, that was awful. The Jews three different times hauled into captivity. The city itself destroyed, the temple dismantled. That was a horrible time. The Assyrians were the baddest boys on the planet, and they hauled away the tribes Israel, of Ephraim of the northern kingdom, Yisrael. It doesn't get any worse than the Assyrians. They were the ultimate tyrants. And as bad as that was, it got far worse much later. I've just gone from forward to back, and now going forward from the Greeks, you come to the Romans. And the Romans besieged Israel three times. In fact, it was the Maccabees that actually invited them in. That was the initial context. Three different times, 66 BCE, while there was this great rivalry of the Hasmonean dynasty over who was going to be the big muckety-muck over the temple, since that job paid more than, because you could steal more money from being the head priest than you could being the king of Israel under the control of whatever power was in place. That was the first of the Roman sieges. That one was bad. But in 70, it was far worse, and nothing compares to what Hadrian did in, between 133 and 135. Of course, Hadrian's was as a direct result of the father of rabbinic Judaism, Akiba, who came up with the notion of Bar Kokhba being a messiah. Of course, he was a false messiah, and he was the one that brought the Romans in and caused the diaspora, led to the Holocaust, and that's the founder of your religion. He was wrong about his false messiah and caused more harm for your people than anything else. There's something tragically wrong with you when you begin your religion with such a scumbag. But that was a horrible time. And the treatment that Jews received in Europe under the control of the Roman Catholic Church for hundreds and hundreds of years was despicable beyond imagination. And then there were the Islamic conquests, where they were savages. And there's still Islamic terrorism to this day. And then, of course, there was Europe erupting in a siege of anti-Semitism. It wasn't just the Nazis, it was all of Europe that led to the Holocaust. And nothing has ever happened that we can imagine that is worse than that. It was interesting today. I was reading an article. There were some twins, two women, that were experimented on by Mengele in Auschwitz. You know, this is one of the darkest of the Nazis. Mm-hmm. And talks about how they survived and what the Nazis tried to do to them. And the comments following the article, it was a Yahoo News report. The comments on the article, at least 80% denied the Holocaust. I mean, for you to deny the Holocaust, you have to be so effing bomb stupid that
that's shocking.
The world would be better off without you. It's just astonishing that somebody could be that stupid. And then there was about a third of the comments that were, oh, get over it, you know, enough of that already, get on with your lives. As opposed to understanding the significance of decimation of an entire race of people and death camps. One said, you know, Auschwitz was really a nice place. They had a dance hall. They had an orchestra. They had soccer fields. They had a swimming pool for the inmates, but they had no gas chambers. They had no crematoria. I've been there. How could you be that stupid? Nonetheless, it was the Holocaust was a pretty dire time. And what God says here is, alas, assuredly, this time will be so different that there has never been anything similar to it. It is the time of Israel's troubles. That's what is confronting you. You think that it's irritating now because the progressives are restricting access to your streets, or the conservatives are trying to rein in your judiciary, or the Muslims in Ramallah and places of that ilk are plotting to kill you. You know, they ran a poll just recently within the Fakistanian territories of their views of committing terrorist acts against Jews, of murdering Jewish civilians for no other reason than, well, you don't like them. You want to get rid of them.
Yeah.
75% of the Muslim Fakistanians said that they strongly supported murdering Jews. How in the world could the world want to give a state to people with that mindset? Unless they are so disgustingly anti-Semitic that they agree with them.
Yeah.
Then shame on you.
Yeah.
So, Kirk, this is the worst of the TS words,
mm-hmm.
Sarah.
Good
day. And it is, here is Yahweh, through his prophet, creating a written record of God saying, this will be the worst of the worst. And whether it is now, whether it is 3 years from now that this begins, or whether this begins 6.5 years from now, interesting question, or all of the above. The answer, though, for anyone who is listening is, who cares? Why don't you just simply shed your ignorance, walk away from the lies of religion and politics, observe Yahweh's testimony as he asked, embrace him by name, accept the five conditions of the covenant, the first of which requires you to separate yourself from religion and politics and conspiracy, by the way, and your societal customs. Walk to Yahweh along the path he has provided, which is through the Moed Mikre, which means when we come to Passover in 2 weeks, it is Chag Matzah. The most important day is Matzah. That is where your soul is purged of
cleansed.
Religious and political
yeah.
corruption. It's the most important of the day. It's not a missing ingredient in Passover. Passover is not 7 days. Matzah is 7 days, and it incorporates Pesach, which you must attend the Yahweh 7 Moed Mikre. You know, the most important to us is Teruah, because that's our job.
Yeah.
And the most important for Yahweh is Kippurim, because that's the day that he is reuniting himself with his family. But for those who are listening to our words today, you need to begin with Pesach, Matzah, Bikurim, and Shavuah. Pesach is the doorway to life eternal. Matzah is the threshold on which we are cleansed before we enter Yahweh's home and family of religious and political perversions, such that on Bikurim, firstborn children, we are born into Yahweh's eternal covenant family. So that 7 sevens later on Shavuah, Yahweh spiritually enriches, empowers, and enlightens us, enabling us to be effective troubadours, for us to be effective witnesses on Teruah as we move towards the fulfillment of Yom Kippurim and alert Israelites that they need to start observing Yahweh's testimony. And those who do will 5 days later have the opportunity to camp out. Sukkah means shelters and tents, to camp out with Yahweh for 1,000 years here on earth as he restores the conditions to those found in the Garden of Eden, where there was no religion, no politics, no government. There was no judiciary, so you do not have to worry about judicial reform. But that's where we're headed. Alas, yeah. Assuredly, this time will be so different that there has never been anything similar to it. It is the time of Jacob's troubles. And yet from it, he, Jacob, representing Yisrael, will be liberated and saved. Jeremiah 37. And it will happen in that day. Yeah. He, Jacob, Israel, will be liberated and saved. Yasha. You know, it's interesting. In Rabbinic Judaism, there is no salvation. They have no concept of what Pesach, Matzah, and Makorim represent. They have no salvation. Your purpose is to comply with the rabbinical edicts and get your life all twisted up in a knot over the billions of things you cannot do, such that you live a righteous life, but for no purpose other than to live the righteous life. No heaven, no hell, no Yahweh. So I guess what's the purpose of salvation if there's only a G-D? But according to Yahweh, Jacob, representing Israel, will be liberated from all of this and saved. And it shall be in that day, it will happen in that day, prophetically declares Nahum, Yahweh, of the vast array of spiritual implements, Shabbat. There's another TS words. This one positive. Mm-hmm. That I will break, Shabar, his yoke, his means of control and manipulation from upon your neck, and I will pull it off and tear it away along with the bounds and shackles. Now, what's interesting here is the pronouns. So it's going to happen in that day, prophetically says. So sentence before, and yet from it, he, Jacob, will be liberated and saved. And it will happen in that day, prophetically declares Yahweh of the heavenly host, that I will break his implements of control and manipulation. Who's he? Who's his? Who are these implements of control and manipulation?
My God, the whole world's trying to manipulate them and control them.
Jacob, Israel.
Oh, well, himself.
It's
no.
Israel's means to control Jews.
Their
politics,
get it either.
Their rabbis, their
the whole organization.
Yeah.
Babylon again, yeah.
Jews being their own worst enemies, and God says, I'm going to break their ability to control and influence each other, because when they control each other, they lead them away from me. So the only way to liberate Jews so they can form a relationship with Yahweh is to break the bonds of control of things like Judaism and progressive politics and the Supreme Court and other influences within the lives of the Jewish people. I will pull off and tear away your bonds and shackles. You know, even the telephones in the Haredim world are a shackle. They have to have Kodesh phones that are not, that can't connect to the internet. They only can certain numbers that they can dial. They can't even call a help line when the rabbi is abusing sexually their sister or their wife or their daughter. They can't learn the truth by coming to a site like yadaya.com. They're kept in an intellectual ghetto by those who are preying upon them, the rabbis. They're doing it to themselves.
Yeah, it's true.
Those who are illegitimate and unauthorized, falsely claiming authority. You know, this is the one of the big things about the Maccabean revolt, mm-hmm. is that while the Maccabees, there's no way to know if the Maccabees were Lowy or not. There is one line in their books, which we have no idea if the degree the things that they wrote are true. They're not inspired by Yahweh. Where they have some great grandfather being of a priestly line, but it's not known, and they didn't care. There was a period of time when Jews didn't care about anything Yahweh said, and so the idea that the Lowy were to provide the Kohen was meaningless to them. The control mechanism, which became later known as Pharisees and Sadducees, had no correlation whatsoever to the Lowy, the Levites. And so rabbis who claim to have authority, and that's the reason Israel doesn't have a constitution, is the rabbis don't want to lose control. They realize that there's mm-hmm. no way they will prevail by strength of their argument. And so the only way they can maintain their control over Israel and Jews is to have it imposed. And so they're the ones who are unauthorized. They're the ones who are illegitimate. The ones that claim to be authorized and to be legitimate are the very people Yahweh is condemning. They're the ones who are falsely claiming authority, and it goes all the way back to this Maccabean period where the credentials that Yahweh had established for who would serve as his Lowy and his Kohen to serve the people by helping them understand the seven Moed Mikre was cast away. So those who are illegitimate and authorized, those falsely claiming authority, who are from a distant place advocating that which is improper, will no longer make him work for them. Instead, they will serve with Yahweh, their God, and with Dod, their king and counselor, whom to reveal the way to the benefits of the relationship, I will raise up and establish for them. Yirmiyah 39. Who is coming back?
Well, those come back with Yahweh. And that's why you read it and go, how the heck could you come up with, were you crazy?
How could you be somebody like Maimonides or Akiba or any one of these so-called sages or rabbis, and you're saying that, well, there's going to be a Messiah, we just don't know his name.
Right.
Or we don't know when he's going to come. How could you be that stupid? You mean, can't you read, it's written in Hebrew, that Yahweh anointed Dod three times? That he is the rabbi? That he is the anointed Messiah? It says it three different times that Yahweh not only anointed him with the anointing oil at his specific request, but that he also anointed him with this set-apart spirit. Three times. He is the Messiah.
Yeah, I'm looking at it.
God says it over and over again through his prophets that when he comes back, this is God describing his return, he is coming back with Dod, David. And that the king is going to be Dod, David. How could you be a Christian? You're coming with this book. The only place that even talks about a quasi-New Testament, even though that's a bad translation, is Jeremiah 31, and here in 30 that leads up to it, it says that Dod David is the one that's returning as king, and yet your whole religion is based upon your Jesus being the Messiah, him being the king, him being the Son of God, having stolen all of those accolades and titles from Dod, and that he is supposed to have a second coming. No. How could you not know who your Messiah is? How could you not know when he's coming? Hey, I'm a goy. I know. How come you can't figure it out?
The translators know that. They said it right here. I'm looking at all these English translations. It says Dode, Yahweh and Dode. Yahweh, all you got to do is look under the where it says Lord, and you read as Yahweh, that's Yahweh.
The reason we don't call him David is there's no V in the Hebrew.
It is,
yeah. At the time this was written, and really until the very recently, there was no V sound in Hebrew. The Wah is German. Like the Wah in Yahweh's name. It's a vowel. It was pronounced like an O, just like Yahweh, just like Torah, just like Shalom. The O sound is from the Wah. And so the name of Dode has two delefts with a wah in the middle. It's Dode. Now, there are every book written about it. Like when Dode was writing his own Psalms, he spelled his name D-W-D. When Yashiah was speaking of him, it's D-W-D. Yirmiyah speaking of him, it's D-W-D. When Shamuel, who says the most about him, spoke of him, D-W-D. It's only books that were written very much later that mix in some D-W-Y-D, which would be Doed. But the spelling, somewhat 750 of the 1,100 or 800 of the 1,100 times that Dode's name is mentioned, it is D-W-D, and in Hebrew that would be Dode. That's just the way she crumbles the name means beloved. But clearly, instead they will serve with Yahweh, their God, and with Dode, their king and counselor, whom to reveal the way to the benefits of the relationship, I will raise up and establish for them. Christianity exists because, beginning with Paul in his first letter, that to the Galatians, came up with this lame notion that every statement made about Dode David, about him being the Son of God, about him being the Messiah, about him being the returning king, that every statement about Dode really applied to this mythical character named Jesus. And so Jesus became the Christ because, well, the whole discussions about Dode had him being the Messiah, and that which was said about Dode must have really meant to have been said about Jesus, that somehow God just didn't know how to write his name or say his name, but that's who he really meant, even though he wrote the other fellow's name. That's the basis of Christianity. Without that transfer, there is nothing to the religion. You don't have a Son of God. You don't have a Messiah. You don't have a Christ. You got nothing. And so,
and if he returns, you're in trouble because then he's not the Passover Lamb. So you can't win on this thing.
Yeah, and of course the Jews in denying him are in even worse shape because he was the Passover Lamb. His name was Yahusha. Yahweh saves. He was the Passover Lamb, and as the Passover Lamb, he opened the doorway to life eternal. And then Yahweh allowed his soul to go into Sheol to expunge our religious and political stigma so that we could be perfected and therefore brought into his family on Bukurim as firstborn children. Those things were fulfilled in year 4000 Yah, and in Judaism they're all denied because Judaism actually began with the express purpose of trying to fend off this new religion of Christianity so that rabbis could continue to control the Jewish people. So it exists to condemn Christianity so they condemn Yahusha, and therefore they condemn the Passover Lamb, precluding themselves of life. And Christianity creates this misnomer that their Jesus is everything but the Passover Lamb. He is instead the Son of God and the Messiah, neither which apply. both religions get it completely wrong.
Yes.
But we've come to the end of our broadcast portion. We are now still recording for those who have called in as opposed to those who are listening online. They can still hear us. And, of course, 99% of the listenership of the program is to the archive. So we'll proceed just a wee bit longer. I told both Kirk and Dee before the program began that by translating and commenting on Yahweh's testimony 12 hours a day, day in and day out, after a while, my eyes begin to scream at me, and I get headaches that are based on eye strain. And unfortunately, these last 3 or 4 days, it's been a little rough. So I'm not going to go too much longer. But I do want to talk a little bit about it's been a little bit rough because it's going to get really rough for God's people. God is not, and I don't sit here and say, okay, God, I've got a headache, you know, and I'm sitting here 10 hours translating and commenting. Wouldn't it be nice if you get rid of the headache for me so that I could do this with a fresh mind? No. He is not my genie, not in a bottle that I can rub the side of it and say, I want 3 wishes. I want to be 20 pounds thinner and 10 years younger. And
a better putter.
And a better putter and driver of the golf ball. No. If the God played the role of genie, then everybody would be coming to him, and for all the wrong reasons.
Right.
And it's actually, can you tough it out? Can you overcome challenges? Since in every life there are problems, and in Jewish lives they're going to become intense. Can you endure? Stay the course. And be productive when things are tough.
Yeah.
That's the proof.
Right.
And so it is important that we endure and succeed through the same kind of obstacles that would bring others down.
Right.
So that is the nature of that, and something that you're going to keep in mind as things get to be very, very tough. There is one assurance, and that is that if you choose to accept and act upon the 5 conditions of the covenant, you attend Yahweh's 7 invitations to meet and understand what he is doing for you on those days, accept him by name, are observant of what he has to say, then your soul is protected. You will spend eternity with him in his home and explore the universe and be enriched and be empowered and be enlightened and go from a three-dimensional being stuck in a failing human body, a physical body, to being a spiritual 7-dimensional being. That's the right call. Do that, and the rest of it just doesn't matter. As a matter of fact, as we talk about how much time we have left, one of the things that's really important to us is, yes, being a 7-dimensional being in Yahweh's company is better than my back and eyes hurting as I sit here in this chair 12 hours a day, translating and thinking about Yahweh's testimony to share it with you. Those books are all available at yadayah.com. They're all available in their entirety for free. The key thing is that we want Yahweh to be pleased when he returns on Yom Kippurim with Dod, and that the family that is there that is reaching up and accepting him because they have chosen to be observant and to return makes him happy, that there are enough quality people there that he is pleased on that day. That is really essential. To us, to him, to Dod, and I'm going to tell you for certain, to those people who choose to be there. And so whatever time and opportunity and energy we have between now and then, we're going to spend it there. that we're going to spend it doing this because of the enormous benefit it is for those people who don't currently know him, but will come to know him because of what we're doing together. So we're doing this for you. Take advantage of it. We're asking nothing from you in return. Our only benefit in all of this is twofold. We love Yahweh. He's our Father. We want our Father happy. We want our Father pleased with his people. He's done so much for them. He deserves that. And second, eternity is a long time. The universe is a big place. Both are going to be more enjoyable with more people, quality people to share them with. So yes. We want you. Yeah. And it's the same thing as seeing and experiencing anything spectacular. You'd have to be a real louse to experience something as wonderful as Yahweh and his testimony and his covenant, and to say, I'm going to keep it for myself. I'm not telling anybody about that.
Yes, agreed.
I think it's the first thing everybody does is share. I start saying, did you know about this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, I did.
Exactly.
I drove all my friends away.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. We tend to share before we know what to share.
Oh, we know very much.
And, and we're not trying to be popular.
Right.
You know,
we're
saying you've got to make a decision, and this decision is going to make you unpopular. Yahweh's favorite term is Kodesh, and Kodesh means set apart, special, unique, uncommon, and thus not popular. So if you're part of a popular group, then you are not with God.
Better rethink it.
Yeah. So God is not running a popularity contest. He instead is looking for people who want to be set apart and special.
Yep.
Then
also, I'm saying, how many times in your life could you ever do something where you could really please the creator of the universe?
Yeah.
For real.
I mean, what
can
you
really
possibly
do for God?
Feeble little nothings. What could we possibly do? And all of a sudden, here's an opportunity to say, and Yah would actually smile. He says so. We've already covered a whole bunch of verses.
Yeah.
He's just
delighted. I feel like I finally had a chance to give God and his people a great gift. You know, we've written 30 books and we've done 10,000 or more radio programs and podcasts. And so, you know, we've been at this for a long time, but just this week, a couple of days ago, thanks to the edit team and Jackie and publishing and so many others that were supportive through this whole process, we finished the volume 3 of Babel. It's the three books that were revealed, the two books revealed in Babylon. Ezekiel is the two book series, with Daniel being the first of the three volumes. Ezekiel is so demonic, so utterly sadistic and satanic. And its
so
purpose is to dehumanize and to demonize Jews. And everything he says is wrong. He didn't get a single prophecy right. But that's the smallest part of the problem. And it doesn't just contradict the Torah. In fact, his idea of the Mikra is to have one of them. Just one. It's a Pesach, but even Pesach, everything is different, and there actually is no lamb. And matzah is something to eat during Pesach. The Mikra matzah doesn't exist. Bikkurim doesn't exist. Shabuah doesn't exist. Teruah doesn't exist. And most certainly, Kippurim doesn't exist, the Day of Reconciliations, because that's the day he doesn't want Yahweh to show up. And though he mentions that there is a... an event that will take place when Sukkah begins. You don't even know the name. So, and it's replaced. We have celebrate the moon day, a feast of the Shabbat, and we have All Nincompoops Day. I call it All Idiots Day. is another one of his favorite festivals called Idiot's Day. Before all of these, he actually has the Feast of the Beast. And the Feast of the Beast, he takes the Gaborim, plural. Gaborim are the people who are the boldest and most courageous in communicating Yahweh's message. Dod is the ultimate Gabor, but it was plural Gaborim. So there's more of them than the one. It's likely Yada, Elia, and Dod. That he intends to eat. He intends to eat, to plate them, to carve them up, and to share their flesh with his followers, and then drink their blood. This is the book of Ezekiel. So by exposing it and condemning it, I felt that we did something really magnificent, because we freed the world from this stench that doesn't belong associated with God, and said, yeah, it's stupid, it's demonic, it's mean, it's idiotic, but it has nothing to do with God. Like this whole thing about Gog and Magog. There's no Gog. There's no Magog. The whole thing is a farce. And people trying to search for what it means, forget it. And, of course, this book has the devil rape Chawa. And then he turns Jewish women into prostitutes, doesn't like the way they act as prostitutes, and then has them tortured and their families killed. So it is a great liberation of Jewish women to expose and condemn this book, and of the Jewish people. But it still stings, because this book was written by a Jew on behalf of Satan. And it was many, many religious Jews that continued to place it in the midst of Yahweh's prophets and give it credibility. And so they gave credibility to the very book that demonized and dehumanized them. That's a special kind of stupid. But anyway, the books are finished. If there was ever something that I would like the entire Jewish world to read, it'd be those three books on Babel. Collectively, I guess they're 1,500 pages or more, 2,000 pages, but it's worth the read. If anything, it will free you from religion. Just as the four volumes of Questioning Paul will free every Christian from Paul's influence and the plague of death, these three books on Babel will free Jews of rabbinic influence and free Yahweh from having his testimony commingled with Satan's. We're very pleased to be able to offer that. And I'm back now translating the Mizmor for Volume 3 of Coming Home. And it is amazing how insightful Dod is. There are some sentences that you could write a book about, just the sentence and what he is conveying and his relationship with Yahweh. And there's a special way to read these Mizmor that they were intended this way, which is when Dod is speaking in first person, and he's speaking to Yahweh in second person, you ought to read yourself into the story. You ought to read it as if it's you saying it. Read it in first person.
Wow.
Apply it to your life. Dod is the exemplar. He represents the things Yahweh loves: passion, intensity, intellect, courage. He's articulate. He is bold. And he's right about God. Brilliant mind. These are things that Yahweh loves, and it is a real pleasure to return and to be able to explain just how this man revealed the very relationship Yahweh is seeking to develop with us. And for those who are listening, it is exceedingly simple. God wants to be dad. That's all he wants. He's really not interested in being your God. That's what he is. It's not what he wants to be. He is. It's not what he wants to be. He wants to be dad. He wants you to be his son or daughter. He wants to raise you. He wants to teach you. He wants to guide you. He wants to protect you. He wants to enjoy seeing you grow and become all you can be. That's what he wants. It's that utterly simple. That's what the covenant is all about, is us becoming Yahweh's children. That's the purpose of the Moed Mikre, particularly as we go through this doorway of life, past this threshold of perfection, so that we become Bokurim, firstborn children, and then are enriched and empowered and enlightened by our God, ultimately with God's family, reconciled with him on the day of reconciliation, all so that we can camp out together on Sukkah. That's the message. This is not a God that wants to be feared. He doesn't want to be worshipped. Not interested in you praying to him. Has no interest in donations. Has no interest in setting rules or laws. Doesn't even have a Hebrew word for obey. He wants to be dad. Yeah. And he's approachable. He's likable. He's fun. You have nothing to lose to embrace him and everything to gain. And, you know, the beauty of the whole thing is, well, Dode was brilliant. When he became emotional, he really was a dunderhead. He really was. He did some really dumb stuff. And, yeah, well, loves him so much that he calls him his son and his firstborn and his shepherd, his messiah, his king, his faith, everything. And yet he is seriously flawed. It's not great.
That's a good comment. Yeah,
man,
no.
Yeah, hope for us, man.
No joke.
Yeah.
Man, I can
God
relate.
Is not overly
I can
demanding.
Too.
He is, you know, Dode really got full of himself. He and we'll talk about this in a future program. He says, you know, God, there is no way you can walk away from me. You are my assistant. That's just the way it's going to be. And it's true. God's here to help us. And there is no way he's going to walk away from us. I mean,
no.
I'm not bold enough to say it. I'll agree with him.
But I'm glad you did.
Yeah, I'll let you do it. No, actually, I did have a little fun with it, but I actually said that's when you know you are right where he wants you to be when you're making that same statement. You are my assistant. You're my helper, and you will never leave
me
or walk away from me. And that's exactly what he wants you to say because it happens to be true. And I want you to become part of the covenant family. So this is the story that Yahweh was telling his people. Boy, I tell you what, there is no better time to be able to share these statements from his witness than it is right now. It is really on point. So thank you so much for being part of this program tonight. We'll be a week closer to Chag Matzah and the opening celebration of Pesach, 1 week from today. May Yah bless you all. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.